All right, everybody. So welcome. This is our next to last class of the Senior Fellowship. Tonight we deal with the title classes, Jewish Business Law Unveiled, Unraveling the Cases of No Parking, Sticky Fingers, and Buying Stolen Goods. Diane Bavakasha, read us the first case, case number one. Let's jump into it.
The commercial district had grown rapidly during the past decade. Office buildings and stores lined the streets. Traffic became a nightmare, and street parking was almost impossible. Parking lots sharply increased their rates, charging over $20 for a day's parking. Nestled among the office buildings stood a lone house, a relic of the residential days of the area. Mr. Spitz refused to move from his home of 40 years and steadfastly refused the many offers for his property. He resented the encroaching commercial development. In front of the house was a private parking area where Mr. Spitz kept his car. Whenever he was out, people eyed the empty spot enviously. However, Mr. Spitz had no interest in renting his spot. Mr. Abrams owned the adjacent store and drove in every morning and parked in the nearby parking lot. As Mr. Abrams was leaving the store one evening, he saw Mr. Spitz lugging suitcases into his car. "Are you going somewhere?" Mr. Abrams asked. "Yes," Mr. Spitz answered with a smile. "One of my grandchildren in Israel is getting married, so we're flying there tonight." "Mazel tov," he wished him. "How long will you be there?" "We'll be away for a month. My son will meet us at the airport and keep the car until we return." The next morning, as Mr. Abrams headed towards the parking lot, he noticed Mr. Spitz's vacant parking area. A sudden thought came to him. "Mr. Spitz is away for the month," Mr. Abrams said to himself. "What's it to him if I use his spot?" And meanwhile, he pulled into the spot and parked there. "That's $25 saved," he thought. After parking there for 3 weeks, he encountered Mr. Spitz's son one day. "What are you doing on our property?" the son asked. "I own the adjacent store. Your father mentioned that you would be away for the month, so I've been parking here." "Don't you realize this is private property? You're trespassing," the son said. "My father doesn't want people to get into the habit of using his spot. Do not park here anymore." However, the next morning, Mr. Abrams was running very late. He parked in Mr. Spitz's spot and ran in the store. "I don't think it's nice of him not to let me park here," he rationalized. He continued to park there for the remainder of the week. When Mr. Spitz returned from Israel, he was angry. He walked into the store and demanded an explanation. "You were away anyway," Mr. Abrams responded. "What difference does it make to you?" "It's my property, and I don't have to let anyone else use it," Mr. Spitz retorted. "You trespassed." He handed Mr. Abrams a bill that read, "20 days of parking, $25 a day, total $500. Mr. Abrams looked at the bill. "Even if I was wrong to use the driveway, why should I pay you? You had no plans to rent it." "Why shouldn't you pay?" shot back Mr. Spitz. "You benefited from my spot. Otherwise, you would have had to pay the parking lot." Mr. Abrams was perplexed. He called Rabbi Diane and explained the situation. "Does Mr. Abrams have to pay for the parking?"
Okay. So, Diane, you get first dibs.
Okay. Say he has to pay for parking because he's right. I mean, Mr. Spitz is right. He would have had, he owned the store. He had to go into the store every day. He would have had to pay no matter what. So if he didn't pay the private parking garage, he should pay him. Now, I understand that wasn't his intent, but I still think he should pay.
So you say he had to pay the full $500?
Yeah, because that's what parking in the parking garage would have cost him. It's not like Mr. Spitz is charging him more than the parking garage. That I would have found not normal. But if he's charging what he would normally pay, and it's even closer to the store, then yeah.
Okay. All right. So Diane's coming out of the gate hot with a full $500 that Mr. Spitz. Okay, we go on to. All right.
I say, yeah, absolutely. He has
full 500.
Full 500. He was told not to park there. He parked there anyway, thinking he could get away with it.
But
And
he wasn't. Now, when was he? When was he told not to park? What week? Right. So the first week he wasn't told. Now he knows that Mr. Spitz is
hey, people parking in his spot.
right. He does know
You
that.
know, he
But
knows
then
he has to
on after week three, he was told explicitly by
his
the
son.
son,
So that's
don't
correct. Right.
trespass.
That's kind of warning number two.
Okay. So you still you're going with the full 500.
It's his property. He can charge whatever rate he wants because he was told that he can't park there. So I think he should pay it.
Okay.
I think that was strict. I feel like it was empty, and I don't see what the big deal is. I don't really feel like it was theft because he wasn't going to rent it out to anyone else. So I mean, I just feel like that's pretty strict. I mean, the bigger problem is after he was explicitly told not to. But I kind of don't see it as a big issue. I mean, like in 3 weeks, I mean, in the 3 weeks when he wasn't explicitly told not to park there, I'm kind of like, oh, it was empty and he wasn't renting it out. He wasn't
That's
going to.
Mr. Abrams' argument.
I
It's an empty
understand it,
spot.
yeah.
Nobody's using it.
I mean, if
So there's
anything, I
no
think he's
quote-unquote
going to.
skin off his nose, as they
That's
say.
why. So
Right.
that
You
he's
could
not.
be.
But, like, what if it was like he came home early?
Right. So he's now. What he's arguing is that he might be. He's even admitting in nice language, it might be that I am being mean, but it's my property. And I have the right to say that you cannot park there. That's what it means, my property.
I get it
All
under
right,
the
so you're saying,
law,
but, so you're,
but
but, so, but what we're asking is halachically, does Mr. Spitz, does Mr.
don't know. I feel like
Mr. Spitz paying for this body?
I guess Mr.
Does
Spitz will
Mr.
be
Spitz,
responsible.
does Mr. Abrams have to pay Mr. Spitz $500? And if not $500, how much? We're going to have to wait on. Okay,
Yeah,
so 250, half.
five,
One and a
then
quarter. You're saying one and a quarter.
definitely for the last week, I think, but then for the 3 weeks that he used it when he wasn't explicitly told not to, I'd say half. So maybe in total, I'd say he owes him like,
375.
yeah, I would
Or
say
half of
that's
the 3 weeks,
right.
so it's.
Half of the 3 weeks, like 125, and then the last one, what? Wait, I'm doing
Yeah,
math
so
wrong.
250, so 250 in total. Half of the first 3 weeks. All right, which is one and a quarter. So that's the full 250. 250. 500, 500, 250. 8 times. Did you get the case? No, it's part of his house. He
Yeah.
has a cherished spot. Okay.
It's like
Luckily, you're allowed to be a jerk.
and
I'm not
technically,
saying he's not, or
he doesn't want to
it would
set
be
like a
nicer.
precedent. Like every time he's not
Well,
there, that
if it
somebody has
were
to park
me,
there.
right, so
I
Scott,
wouldn't care. Like, go for it.
I understand that, but he's now obviously he's what they call an evil Machbid. Machbid means particular. That's why he's walking into the guy's store hand in hand and presenting him with a bill.
Like this is a situation where like
To the floor.
parking is like very at a premium wherever they are. So like he doesn't want to set a precedent that
Hey
we're
guys, anybody on Zoom
okay.
would like to actually put their camera on? That would be nice. It's like
I think
it's like a little bit like you're here.
what's the rate for parking they charge 25 for the spider parking lot.
Let me send the class. Persnickety.
I mean, I guess he's allowed to be persnickety. I just, I
don't know.
kind of
I'm
just,
thinking of like,
well,
I just don't know
say
how
this is
like,
like New York and like spots go for like 200 grand. Like,
but if you were going to leave it empty anyway, I don't know. I
have a
don't
different
know
opinion.
what the law would
One second, one second, one second, one second. I
pressure
want to
for.
share with
Just say
them.
small claims court, you can probably.
Small claims court would say, I mean, civil law, I don't know what it is. In U.S. civil law, I don't know what they would say.
Let me consult a lawyer.
Hey guys, on Zoom. Welcome, Jamie. Welcome, Shoshana. You guys able to put your cameras on? Okay, I got it. All right. Thank you, Shoshana. Okay, so well, all right, so we're gonna get to that. We're gonna get that. All right, so what do you say, Eitan?
I'm here. Sorry, no camera tonight, though.
I say, so Mr. Smith was such private property, but the $25 is an over 20 amount from the other whole parking lot, right? That's what the parking is generally charged.
Well, but he's there. He seems to be paying 20. The cost him for his stay is $25 a day.
Mr. Smith?
Yeah.
Mr. Spitz.
No, Mr. Abrams. Okay, right, he works there.
Mr. Spitz is separate from the parking lot.
Correct.
And he doesn't pay anything to the parking.
No, because it's his spot.
So he's saying
that you would have had to go in the commercial lot and pay $25 a day.
I don't. Mr. Spitz, it's not the private parking lot is like, in a way unrelated because Mr. Spitz is not like paying that money. So he doesn't. It's almost like he's having a claim to the other parking lot's money in a way, in my opinion, because.
Okay.
And I think there's something else a problem because it seems like Mr. Avery might have been trespassed.
I don't think
he has an automatic right to $25 since that's not his right to charge parking fees that the other place charges. Like them. He doesn't have, I don't think he has a right to take what a private business does and say, I am not that business too.
Since you are saving the money from that, it automatically does not accrue to you. That's your argument.
Yeah. I think
so. Does he own anything?
In charge, and he did that. That doesn't. Mr. Spitz is not really related. Part of the parking business, garage business.
No, but he took you. But he got a spot. He knows one thing's clear. How much did Mr. Abrams save over the month by parking in front of Mr. Abrams' house? Mr. Smith's house. He did save $500.
But he didn't save it from Mr. Spitz. He saved it.
Okay. Now, so I'm going to get right to the point, Eitan. Does Mr. Abrams have to pay Mr. Spitz anything? So far, we have two people saying the full 500 is claimed. I got Justin coming at the 250. What do you say? Say zero?
I don't think it's necessarily.
Throw me a number. He wants $500. That's what he wants.
I don't think he has a right to demand a certain amount like that.
So he owes him any money?
I think he has to maybe, I don't know if he has
split it?
Maybe, I don't think so. I don't think he has a
claim. So he has no claim, he has $0. He could say, I'm going to go to Basin.
Not for that,
what maybe. Would the Basin say? That's what I'm asking you. What would the Basin say? What would the court say? Right, Mr. Smith did not lose it. He didn't lose anything. That's what Ethan's kind of say. He's not in the parking business. So why is he suddenly going to put up a shingle and getting paid for it? He never claimed to be in the parking business.
I think Chris would have to make it clear beforehand that if someone parks it, they would get charged.
He did not make it clear, correct.
So I think he can come after with that guy. Sure, no, yes, wrong. I think he could.
How about when, that's what the so Justin said? How about at the end of after end of week three, his son says, "How you're trespassing? I don't want you no park here," and then he did it anyways. So even for the last week, he doesn't get any money for that, even when he's told explicitly not to shoot.
You're liable to pay someone for trespassing when you don't call damage, then I think that's a separate issue.
You're not giving me a number.
Well, $50?
Well, he's not a happy guy. He wants $500. So what is he entitled to? That's what I'm asking you. Quarter? A tenth? Okay, let's go.
I'm going to say nothing.
Okay, you can go with nothing. Okay, fine. All right, so we did the case. All right, so Shoshana, welcome. I sent you the case on the WhatsApp. Okay, so we're going to go to the we'll give the answer with a Okay, we're gonna, as promised, we're gonna give you an answer. Okay, one second. Okay, let's get to that. Here we go. Answer number one. I'm going to go shrink to it. Okay. So, Shoshana, can you read the answer out?
Answer one, Rabbi Dayan said, it would have been nice for Mr. Spitz to allow you to park there in his absence, but he is entitled to refuse, and you were wrong to park there without his permission.
Pause right there, Shoshana. Okay, so that's exactly what Justin said. It would have been nice, but luckily, you can be a jerk, okay? Because it is his property. Okay, I just want to make sure. Okay, all right, go on.
What about the bill, asked Mr. Abrams. This is the classical of Zenehene Vizelochazar.
It's a transliteration, so it's not so good. So I'm going to read it. I'm going to say it slowly. The Hebrew is Zenehene. This one benefited Vizelochazar, and the other guy did not lose, which I think you were touching upon. Go on.
Discussed in the Gemara, answered Rabbi Dayan. You typically paid for parking and gained, but Mr. Spitz had no intention of earning rental, so he lost nothing. The halacha is that although you were wrong to use his property, you are exempt post facto, provided that you didn't cause any damage or loss.
All right, so right now he's saying, if you have a case of Zen and this guy benefited and the other guy didn't lose, even though you shouldn't do that, since he's not, as Eitan said, he's not in the rental business, so he, even though he shouldn't have done that, he has no claim so far. So then go on.
So I don't owe anything, asked Mr. Abrams. You do owe something, concluded Rabbi Dayan. You are obligated to pay for the usage from the time you were explicitly told not to park. Thus, you have to pay for the last week, $125.
Ah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
That was after the second warning.
The first time, the first few weeks, he just knew that the guy was not into it. After week three, he told it explicit, you're trespassing, I don't want your car here. And then he did it anyways. That's already...
That's the clock started then.
What about... Are they determining that 25 is an acceptable number? That's the other parking business. Is that just ignoring anything?
Because that's what it is. Parking at that area is $25 a day.
$25 a day, right? Anyway.
Well, obviously, you're right. Correct. Okay, now I want to ask you guys some app. I'm going off sheet here. Most classic question. One second. I'm not sure what you're going to do. Here, what do you guys say about this case? Stop the share screen. We've all had this experience. You're running late and you're driving and you're in an area, you're one of those towns that has metered parking. Give you two scenarios. Scenario number one, you're going to 7-Eleven for literally 5 minutes to buy a cup of coffee and a snack. You say, I'm going to risk it. What are the chances that the meter maid is going to come and give me a thing? And I don't have any change. Whatever. Can I just park my car in the spot, not feed the meter, run into the, take my chances, run into the 7-Eleven? Or not? Or do I have to pay? Okay.
I feel like doesn't have part of the protocol. Like if you get caught, then you pay the
ticket.
If you don't get caught, then it's good for you. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know if there's anything morally wrong with that. You just are taking a risk.
I would say that is acceptable.
That's what our society says is acceptable. Right.
I'm not asking, but of course that's not my question.
This is a halacha. We're in the senior fellowship. I'm asking you a halacha question. What are the types of questions you have to think?
I would say halachically, no.
So let's try to deconstruct that. First question you have to ask is, what right does the municipality have to charge you for parking on a... Are you not in a public space? Are you part of the public? Is that a part of your space as well as a citizen?
Right. I think that like this 25 cents or whatever, it adds up and that money is used to maintain the road.
Correct. Yes, that is a fair
and stuff like that. So if nobody pays you know, the 25 meters. Cents, it adds up.
Right.
So, okay, now I feel bad.
I personally wouldn't care because I think you're anxious, but I guess
forget about the issue of anxiety.
Anxious that I'm, yeah, they're not, if I knew that they weren't.
Yeah, you know for sure. So but stealing means you had to, hold on. Stealing means what? That you are taking something. That the question is, but what we have to, you understand what I'm trying to, what I'm trying to show you is, what is, how does this work? So it would appear to work as follows. That step one, the spots on the road, even though it's a public spot, there's a general, we mentioned this rule before, Dina de Malchusa Dina, the law of the land is the law, which means that according to halacha, you have to follow American law or French law if you're in France and British law, at the very least in regards to taxation. Parking is a way, as Scott eloquently said, is part of their ways of taxation. The way they pay for the roads and all the upkeep and whatever they want to use the money for, one of their modes of taxation is, one is a sales tax. One is charging, they have meters all over the place, on all the areas that people park. That's how they get tax revenue. So therefore, you have to do it because they're akin to, they are giving you the right to park there. It's not like quite a rental, but you can put your car there. The exchange for the 25 cents per 15 minutes or half an hour, whatever the rate is. Okay. So to an American right here in New York, right? There's everything is, they make a huge amount of money on that. I make even a huge amount of money on. And if you mess and make a mistake, you get the penalty, which is going to be at least 10-fold or 100-fold worth of the cost. Now, here's a more juicy question. Same situation. You want to go into 7-Eleven. You want to get the cup of coffee and the snack. Pull there. The meter has 20 minutes left on the park on the meter. No, you put it. No, it happens. You estimate. You put in an hour's worth of quarters, and you leave after 40 minutes, leaving 20 minutes. Now, for example, in Cedars, they have the Cedars, New York. They have the high-tech meters, which has a little sensor, which is that as soon as you pull out, it goes back to zero.
Is the city allowed to do that, though?
Sure they can. It's their little space to cost to charge taxation. That's how they're doing it. Dina Malchusa Dina. In other words, they have a right, since they are taking care of all the common areas, the bridges, the roads, fire department, police department. They have the right to do that, and we must follow that. Even says the Ramah, the Ashkenaz, even if that taxation seems to be not fully fair, like it's hitting one group more than others. Let's say, always a classic complaint in taxation is you're unfairly burdening this group. Is the classic complaint about all taxation?
What about, like,
no, let's say, for example, you're saying that it's discriminatory. It says that, let's say you're charging 8.5% for sales tax, it'll affect the poor people more because a larger part of their salary is going to pay for like groceries and household items, which are all taxed them at 8.5% versus the rich guy. No, I'm just saying. So I don't get to that complicated case, but I'm just saying the basic. If it's even if it's a poorly organized tax situation and it seems to be unfair, you still have to. Halacha says you must pay the tax. So what about the tax? Can you slide in and get the 20 minutes from the other guy? I'm asking you.
I don't think so. I mean, it's paid for. You got a gift. You got a little gift. I wouldn't feel bad if I was the person.
No, but you can then say put in, you know, that you're going to spend half, let's say it's half an hour for a quarter. Right. Maybe you should put another quarter in.
Even
if he granted you a gift.
What's the gauge? It's like almost like.
I understand that, but he knows he's not using it.
And it's a nice thing for your fellow neighbor. Like you're paying it forward.
You're paying it forward.
Could it be considered a donation or a gift at that point?
Because in that scenario,
sorry, it's hard to hear the people in the room, so I'm not sure if it's been said before, but you're not robbing anyone. The money was paid. So the city is still getting the same amount whether your car is now there or not. The city's not at a loss.
Right, he's not at a loss. Okay, that's a good argument. It's a good argument. So the truth is I need to do more research about that. In order to, it depends how it's formulated. Because you see that they are mockmen because when they have able to, because in other words, they invested in the more digital, you know, with the digital and the sensor ones, first of all, can take credit cards and they have a work. So if you put in quarters, you can, they have worked it out that the city or the town makes more money every way you go. But immediately what they do is you see that they mock it about because as soon as you drive away, all that, they now have a brand new rental opportunity. So they are particular about it. They want, in order to, the fact that they can't collect it, luckily does not make it in there, nor the question of should I put another quarter in there. I don't know the answer. I'm going to reach out to Rabbi Broyd. He's going to give me because he's also American law. He's a professor of American law at Emory University, as well as he's a Dayan, deals with financial law matters. I'm going to throw that one to him. So I don't know the answer. I suspect that what Jamie said and as other people said in the room, might have a, you know, or that they're not my, or that they are mochel. Since they can't collect it, they forgive it. I'm saying, and if they're not going to, they forgive that right because they can't get the right, they can't act upon it until they pony up and buy that $1,000 supersonic censored, meter, which the town of Cedars invested in. I'm sure they made that investment back already. Yes.
But wouldn't that be viewed as already, another example, wouldn't that be viewed as the city not losing out then because that person paid for a certain amount of time and because that person left, that doesn't mean they paid for the amount of time and someone else goes finds it. It's like, not be like the city, still getting paid for that.
Well, that's exactly what Jamie said. That's what Jamie said, and everybody said the same thing. We're all in different, everybody said it in slightly different words. Okay.
So, and you go and you want Metro North Trains and you have to get up. Because a lot of times it's paper. It's not including the phone rules, you have to activate it. But sometimes, they don't collect it. You have to activate the phone, but the ticket, you just have paper.
And so, clearly, a classic situation. Let me explain that. All right. So, Barry, thank you for the question. A related question. This is where anybody who's a veteran, a Long Island Railroad or Metro North or any kind of train and the transit of all of this. Let me tell you the following. Here's the situation. Let's get comfortable, everybody. Here's the case. So, simple case. You could, before they come with the app, what you can still do, you can buy the paper ticket, okay? And you bought, and you want to get the little discount, so you bought the 10 pass, okay? Peak or off peak, whatever your commuting thing is. The guy didn't come. Now you got basically a free, got an extra. Or let's say you're on the phone call. And you typically, now with the app, you got to activate your digital ticket. And a guy will come there with a little machine, whoop, and he'll, with a code, barcode, see, that's good. Okay? It happens very frequently. You're in a commuter train. It's like a bazillion people jammed in there, and they just don't get to you. And you're busy with something. You forgot to activate it. Do you have to, in both cases, activate it because you got the benefit, let it peter out, or B, make a little hole.
They do make an announcement, don't they? Like activate your tickets.
Yes. Well, they're not good. Right.
I know there are people that try and push it all through.
Yeah. Wait until they actually
die. Right. Well, I don't think it's allowed. I think you have to activate the ticket because you're just stealing. You're just literally stealing the fit. You're no different than that person who jumps the turnstile for the subway.
I have another question about that.
Now, what you can do is follows. You can go to the LIR to the window and say, "This is my 10 pass." You know, let's say you have the physical ticket, or they used to have you can buy an individual ticket or a 10 pass. They didn't punch it. Do I and ask the conductor, do I have to make a hole in it because they didn't think? They will always say, appreciate your honesty being on to do that. Now they have the right, you know, as an employee has a right to be mochel, to pardon a basic thing. You know what I'm saying? Let's say, for example, a situation, I was at Staples. I made a Suba copy, so it's think big. Then it came back. I really made a mistake. Came back. There was two more copies. He said, "That's all right. Don't pay." So the person at the print center at Staples has the right to be mochel. You know, it's called small things. You can't hand me the. You can't give me the copier. They can be the machine, but he can say that which cost them like 2 cents. He has the right of mechila, a pardoning something like that. Okay, so you'd. If you had a paper ticket, you'd have to ask and say, by the way, they didn't take my ticket. Do I need to cut it up or that? That they didn't collect it, yeah. Because they certainly have the right.
Not just once, any time that happens.
It, well, if you, or destroy yourself. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Because that's it. Because what is the difference between that and a person who just, you see that in Manhattan, you know, they have a rule. If you jump the turnstile, the catch is $500 or 1,000 even. And always, by the way, it always annoys the hell out of me when I see that. Right. Yeah, well, you know what I mean?
They would charge you money, but it would rip it off.
Right. Yeah, that's a good question. Well, that Narzit Kessler was like you had the old, which does what they still work. They're phasing them out. First is you put through the thing, it charged it, but it got jammed and didn't get through. Could you go through the thing? So technically, you probably could because you paid for the fare. Is it a Mars sign? Everybody can see, hey, there's a. The Jew jumping, you know, turnstile jumping Jew. Not a good look. Not a good look for the Jewish people.
Well, first it's better to ask the people and tell them, like,
the right, fine.
There's no one there.
There's no one there.
Right.
Well, there's security cameras. Would that be more insane?
I would not do it. I don't think a Jew should do that.
What about taking people?
I'm not saying technically it's permitted. I'm not saying anything. It looks like it looks like you're stealing.
What about if you take your people off? You can't do that for like a boom bar science. If it's like allowed and you're gonna
I don't think so.
What if you're out of money and like you don't have any money with you and you just have that amount and it runs out? That happens every once in a while. And it's like late at night and no one can let me in. Is that okay then?
You already paid. All right, maybe. Okay, maybe. I don't know. I'm not. Okay, maybe. Okay, here we go. Let's go to the next case. All right. Let's have somebody in Zoom read. Jamie, could you read?
One more question.
What about this?
Oh, no. Sure. Okay.
After she comes from a small case, good.
Case 2, Sticky Fingers, submitted by the base Hoara. A woman participated in a simcha in my hall, and when she went to wash, the ring she left on the table went missing. She told me that this ring was very valuable and asked me to check the security cameras to try to identify the thief. When I checked the footage, I was shocked to find that one of my non-observant waiters had pocketed the ring. When I confronted him with the evidence and demanded that he return the ring, he said that he had already sold it and he offered to repay $1,000, which is what he thought it was worth. I was hesitant to get involved because I was scared he might try to retaliate. Although looking back, my concern was likely unfounded. What is the responsibility to the woman whose ring was stolen?
No, what is my responsibility?
Oh, oops, what is my responsibility? Sorry, it's on a little screen. First, that's a crime, that is theft. If it's over $1,000 in some districts, it's actually could be considered grand theft and punishable by a felony.
They call grand larceny.
That one. And I think it's different in different districts. Some it's 1,000, 5,000, or 10,000, but yes. So first of all, I don't think she should be worried about retaliation from a waiter that she contracted and paid and then has
Let me explain. The guy owns a catering hall. Okay? This is obviously, this is a religious guy. And he's having a religious, you know, like a Jewish wedding. Mm-hmm. And the woman, you know, as the practice is, that before they do the tilat yadayim for the bread, mm-hmm. people take off their rings. So the water touches all the hand freely. Okay, we're not dealing with that halakhic question. The person has to do that. And if you have an expensive ring, whatever. So, but this woman did. She took off the ring and she put it by her plate. And she went up the walk 10 spaces. And the unscrupulous waiter took the diamond ring and stuck it in his pocket, which got caught on video. But now the guy, the owner of the hall, is apparently nervous, although he says likely unfounded, that if he's going to bring him to the police or, you know, bust him, he's going to have the guy's going to, like, I don't know, hurt him. Okay, so that's the situation. This is an actual case.
I think that this was something that was a trusted situation. People believe that when they take their rings off to perform a religious observance ceremony, that their ring is still going to be there.
Yes.
Since this hall was rented out, so there was a contract and a payment, it wasn't like they were casually on the street, but if you have a contract with someone, there's a certain level of responsibility that when you're in their grounds that you have certain protections. And I think that they should be responsible for the full cost of the ring. If the ring is that valuable, there's probably either a receipt or the store could look it up and have an actual value or an appraisal. So there's a way to prove the actual cost. And if so, then I think they're responsible for the full cost.
Jamie, you're saying that the owner is obligated to pay for the theft of his employee and pay the woman the full cost of the ring?
He hired the employee. He has the security footage. The woman or the person who held the event contracted it to him. So he's responsible for the actions of his employees and what happens on his rented premises.
Okay, I'm going to go first with we're going to go with the people on Zoom. Diane, what do you say?
I would say, I mean, I understand your point that it's not the guy's fault if his own employee stole the ring. I would say he has to pay her back. And if I were the owner of the hall, I would negotiate something with the employee where, let's say, you know, like, I'm not going to totally deprive him of his income, but let's say I take 10% of his income, you know, every whatever, I'm just throwing numbers out, but, you know, something where the guy's going to repay him, because it's not, I mean, yes, it is his responsibility, kind of, because it's his employee, you know. And the other problem with all this is he has video footage. So all of this is very easy to prove. That's a strong point in the defense.
So you're saying he's got to, you're agreeing with Jamie. You're saying the owner got to pay the woman back, and he can garnish the wages of the employee. All right, Shoshana.
My business, we had a similar situation. A guy did a stupid mistake. He took a Tiffany bowl worth well over $1,000 in the subway and forgot it in the subway. So, of course, we never got the bowl back. And luckily, we managed to find another one and send it to the buyer nonetheless. But anyway, that's what my boss did with him. You know, he told him, I wanted to talk to, you know, whatever, $100, you know, a certain percentage until you, you know, you pay me back, you know.
Okay. Shoshana.
I'm wondering if I'm, like, reading too far into this, but does this question go beyond, like, the financial aspect? Like, is the owner, like, at all supposed to try to track down the ring because it could be like an heirloom or unique or something and kind of not replaceable? Like, I'm wondering how much like the person's actually supposed to go through the effort of trying to get it back, and then if that's not possible, I guess paying whatever needs to be paid back to the owner of how much it was appraised for, whatever, and then I would say like firing the waiter, obviously. But
okay, We're gonna go to the people live here. We're gonna go to Eitan. Hey guys.
Well, first of all, I would say that the waiter had no right to that ring and the money in the first place. So it's So I don't think I think the guy, you know, whether I think he has, while well, the waiter has every right and reason to $1,000. But first, I think similar to what Shoshana was saying. I think he's just, you know, first
Who's
of
he?
All,
don't you he?
Oh, the owner.
The owner of the hall.
Yeah, I think first.
The employer.
First, to figure out what to do, first apologize to the woman. Say we found out that this person stole it.
And you should tell him about, you should tell about what happened.
Yeah, because there's no way not to. He has to.
Okay, good.
And say, he found a security footage. Say, maybe find out if the, I mean, first apologize. And,
okay.
And then to find out the woman would want money, or I guess. He could, I guess, he could figure out, like Shoshana said, if there's a way to check the ring or there's not.
He fenced it. He sold it.
No way to check it. So if the woman wants him to buy a new ring, the same ring, or money, because maybe he should offer to like replace the ring instead of just giving money. If not, you'd have to evaluate and find out what ring it was in value to make sure it's $1,000 and not more. And
remember, the guy's willing to pay $1,000. Nobody's mentioned that so far.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying, what if the ring's worth more? You have to find out first.
I understand that.
And I think he should require the waiter, assuming the woman's worth the money, to give the $1,000 when he passes over the woman. Or if he doesn't want to collect the $1,000, like if he's whatever way, if he wants to do it in judgment, he has to pay the woman directly, and then do that. Otherwise, he can take it from the waiter. You know.
Okay. You know, so you're similar to what everyone else saying there. Okay. Justin, do you agree with everybody's been said, or do you have a new angle?
Well, I just think that the pawn shop. So also, no one's talked about involving law enforcement.
Yeah, I was waiting for that. I was waiting for that.
Because I think my standard. If you're aware of a crime, and I mean, I don't know what the obligation to report that crime is.
Okay,
I mean, but it's like. I'm pretty sure there's, obviously, if it's like murder, you can't, if you're withholding something, then I don't know what the civil law would say about withholding. If you know that something happens and you're withholding that from law enforcement, then I feel like that is some kind of crime.
Right.
It's like you're interfering with justice. I mean, I don't know. Actually, I mean, I don't know if you can actually get charged.
So what are you telling? So you got to call the woman and say, by the way, it was my waiter. And I have footage to prove it. And let's meet. And I'm going to tell him he's got to come meet you. We'll meet you all down at the precinct.
I think that is how it works, even with civil law.
Right.
If she decides that she's okay with not pressing,
you want to press charge, and he's willing to offer $1,000 cash. I don't know how much it is. Okay. Okay, good. Okay, first Scott.
Obviously, like $1,000. Typically, when you fence something stolen, like you get pennies on the dollar.
So correct.
I can almost guarantee like that this ring is worth more than
$1,000.
Second, the woman doesn't want $1,000. She wants her ring back.
Correct.
So, like, yeah, obviously, Shoshana was like, you know, this might have been like a like someone.
It's your wedding. It's your engagement ring.
Right. The stone might have her husband's grandmother.
Exactly. Business. Yes. Yes. A lot
of, like, sentiments. Detrimental to it. She wants her ring back. Right. So obviously, like, I think she should, you know, tell the woman, you know, it was the employee who stole it. Do you wish to get loan? Like, he said he stole it. He sold it. It's gone. He's got $1,000. I'm willing to give it to you. Do you want to involve law enforcement? And then it's obviously up to woman. Like,
all right. So you're saying, but you, Justin and Scott are both saying that he, the owner, is exempt from paying her directly. Okay.
This is like he, you know, someone. This is like out of his control. He hired someone to do a job,
right?
Not to steal.
He's not responsible for this crime.
Happy to, you know, transfer the surveillance video to the police and blah blah blah, and give them the information that he actually has, and
yes,
maybe the police can track it down.
All right. So here we go. All right. So Shoshana, read out the response, and I have a postscript with it.
A business owner is generally not liable for theft or damages caused by his employees. The exception to this rule is if workers cause damage in the process of doing their job for which they were hired. If, for instance, someone hired workers to demolish a wall and they were negligent and caused damage when the stones fell, the employer is liable in certain cases. In such cases, however, the reason he must pay is that he retained responsibility for damage caused by his wall. And he should
have responsibility for the potential damage caused by his wall.
Oh, yes. And he should have guarded the wall during the demolition. Since he failed to do so, he is liable due to the principle of mamono hamazik, damages caused by one's possessions. Similarly, if someone hires a contractor to do renovations, even if he did not specify that the contractor would be responsible for all damages caused by his workers, we are certain that the homeowner hired the contractor on that condition. Since he dealt only with the contractor when hiring him, he has no legal recourse vis-a-vis the workers.
That's pronounced vis-a-vis.
Vis-a-vis.
It's French. Vis-a-vis. Which means in regards to the workers caused damage.
The workers who caused damage. It is obvious that no one would hire a contractor to do renovations, an effort in which the existing structure or contents are commonly damaged, as evidenced by the fact that many homeowners make sure that the contractor is insured to cover damages that might occur during renovations. So it must be that the contractor assumed liability for the home and its contents. Though we assume that the contractor accepted responsibility only if this is customary in that locale. In your case, however, where the waiter's theft was unrelated to his job, you bear no responsibility for his actions. Even in the area when people owned slaves and... Even in the era when people owned slaves and should seemingly be liable for their actions, just as a person is responsible for his animal caused damage, the owner is nevertheless exempt. Since a slave has his own mind and the owner cannot watch him every moment, if the owner were responsible for slave's damages, then each time the slave would get angry at his owner, he would damage somebody's possessions to force his owner to pay. Certainly then, you bear no liability for the actions of an employee who is not a slave and is not your property. We must consider, however, whether you have a halachic obligation to investigate what happened and force your worker to pay. The halacha is that anyone who can save another person from financial loss, that is, if he can testify... Or, for example, if he can testify on behalf of a litigant in a case and his testimony will influence the judgment, is required to do so as part of the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda.
Hashavas Aveda means that like this. So let me just say it like this. So basically, I'll shrink it down. He has two points. Except in certain
what does the Ashava Saveda mean again?
It means the returning a lost object.
Thank you.
Okay, so let me just explain this. He so far said two things. Number one, as Justin Scott pointed out, you, and as he pointed out, you do not, your employee is acting in their own free will. And if they make the poor judgment of stealing, it's their crime. It's not your crime. Okay? Now, but if you, but you still have an obligation to help return their lost object. They're now, in this case, the ring. So therefore, you got to testify or, and, you know, share, you know, whatever it needs to be done. Whatever has to be done to help her become, you know, become her advocate to make her whole. Okay, well, go on. Keep on going.
Therefore, if the woman wants to sue the waiter, you would be required to testify and give her the video of him stealing the ring so she can win the court case. You are not obligated to do so, however, if you stand to suffer from it, because the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda does not obligate a person to incur a loss in order to prevent financial loss to another person.
Okay, so that means like this. If you have a reason, if you feel that this guy is like a member of a mafia clan, and you're gonna end up in the bottom of the East River. And I'm saying, if that's the case, then you don't have what I do. But by and large, in a normal case, as Justin and Scott pointed out, you gotta do everything you can do to make this woman whole. You don't have to pay. Now you may do that. We call that as a name of Shura Zedin, going beyond the letter of the law. But the letter of the law is you're not obligated on the theft of your employees. Now again, assuming he's not, there's no known phenomena. If you knew that the guy's a thief and you retained him on your payroll, then that's a different thing. Then there's another protocol, Lo Tamad al Dam Riach, do not stand idly by on the blood of your friend. Therefore, you would be responsible. But in a normal case, if a regular employee, you did your background check and he's not a thief. And you caught him, then you have to become the woman's advocate, do everything to make her whole. You got to, you know, testify, give her the things, give her the video that she should win the case against the guy. Okay. Now, it's clear even if you could fill the mitzvah and you failed to do so, she has no claim against you in Beis Din. All right, so because again, you're not obligated technically. Now, again, there may be a full wrinkle, another wrinkle to this. Because halacha is nestled, part of halacha is that you have to follow the law of the land. Now you got to check your, it may very well be that if you have an employee that does steal from a customer, it may be in your locale that you are obligated. In that case, and if that's the what they call the minhag ha-sochrim, that is the what call the common business law, halacha embraces that. Is that was the assumption of all the contracts? Or I rented out, as this goes back to what Jamie said, I rent out my hall. I provide people a beautiful simcha, and of course I conduct my business in full compliance with the local municipal law. If the law, that thing is that you, the employer, suffer the responsibility, bear the responsibility, then you got to pay. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of bottom line, but it accepts, also embraces what the intentionality of the contract goes based upon American law. Do you understand that point? So you got to find that out as well. But all things being equal, let's say American law does not obligate the business owner to pay for the theft of the guy, then that's it. Eitan.
Obligate the owner to collect the money, the $1,000, for the woman that offered to collect.
He's got to do he's got to do much more than that. He's got to do everything, as Scott said before, he's got to do everything he has to make her whole. And then, you know, talk to her, they want to do a court case, testify, show the film, show the videotape. He's got to do everything he can. He has to help her out. He has to. Hashavas Aveda means what's lost is returning this the ring. He's got to become Yes, he's got to do everything he can to make her whole. Except for writing the check himself. Okay, last case. We're running out of time. Okay, so Diane, Bavaka Shop, buying stolen goods.
Am I allowed to buy something that I know is stolen? And what if I don't know for a fact that it's stolen, but I suspect that it is because the price is way too low for it not to be? For instance, may I use a mechanic if there are rumors that he uses parts from stolen vehicles?
This is not an uncommon question. I remember, going into the classic, going to the subway, and lo and behold, this individual seems to be, felt this is a great place to sell jewelry, selling watches, seemingly very good watches at cut rate, because basically he's selling stolen property. Are you luckily allowed to buy the watch for $25? What? No way you didn't know the owner.
Absolutely.
So how about if it's a no? So two cases. You know for sure it's stolen? No? How about you're not sure? They call gray market, or that he might be getting, let's say, a new carburetor, which normally costs $700. He's only charging you $300.
It's kind of like what you know, personal judgment, where it's like, if it's too good to be true, it's not. You
right.
Know what I mean?
These things exist. I don't know if people steal. I don't know. But, hey. What, Eitan? You're shocked that people steal and sell stuff? No.
More like this.
Auto parts. Like a vehicle will get stolen. A vehicle is worth more in the parts than it is as right. The vehicle itself. So they'll chop it up to sell the muffler, airbags. Like the airbags, there's a whole like ring of people steering like airbags out of vehicles and then selling them to shops to put in other vehicles.
So there's little stands on the street people sold them.
Not the auto parts we're talking about, but Scott basically said there's an entire since. Parts are so expensive, especially original parts. So if you're getting an original, whatever, a Lexus, fill in the blank, carburetor. And the guy can then, you can sell it to this guy at a fraction of the price, and then he just sells a little cheaper. Let's say it costs, if he's going to get it from the regular, because the way that auto shops work is they have a distributor where they get their parts from. And if it's a big job, they don't carry that inventory because it's too expensive. They'll call, and they will deliver sometimes the same day or certainly the next day, getting the part. So let's say the part's $2,000. So he's going to buy it from this sleazy guy, basically, and he's going to buy it for $1,000 or $800, and he's going to sell for $1,500. He's going to make a big markup. Okay. So you say, so Scott, let's do it quickly. Let's even agree with Scott. Scott, if you know it's stolen, no. If it seems to be too low, use your judgment. If it's too good to be true, the answer is no. Do you agree, Scott? Justin, do you agree with Scott? In everything as we know here, the fact pattern is critical. Okay. We're running out of time, so let's just see what he says the answer is. We're gonna go down. Answer number three. All right, Diane, you're taking us home here. So I'm just gonna get to let's see what they have to say. Okay.
A person is not allowed to buy stolen goods from a thief.
Okay, number one, stop right there. So it's an open halacha, which any decent person knows intuitively, okay? You can't buy it. Go on.
So it was in direct violation of Nishnei Yir, Lo Siten
Mirshon. Let me explain that. Lifnei Yir, Lo Siten Mirshon means that you are, it means literally, Lifnei Yir, in front of the blind, you should not put a stumbling block. Because basically, by creating a market for stolen goods, what are you doing? You're causing further theft. Because now you're creating a market where they can turn the product into cash. Okay? Because
that'll be enabling the thief to go further and do more of errors. Okay. Furthermore, buying stolen goods is considered a severe prohibition because it is aiding and abetting the thief who'd be tempted to steal more when he sees that he has a market for loot. The Gemara in Kedushin 56b illustrates this by stating that the mouse doesn't steal, the hole does. In other words, if the mouse wouldn't have a place to store the food he steals, he wouldn't have motivation to steal. Even if the thief could theoretically take his merchandise elsewhere, where nobody knows him or realizes that it's stolen, which means that the buyer may not be enabling him to steal, since transporting merchandise is not commonplace, it is still forbidden to buy it from him. The Acharonim add that one may not even buy from someone who bought merchandise from the thief, because the person who bought
even, from the thief, even two steps away. In other words, person A. Dead.
Because the mouse in the Gemara's parable and the person who buys from him is the hole in which he hides his loot. If the first buyer didn't have that hole to sell the stolen goods, he wouldn't have bought them. So the second buyer is aiding and abetting his transgression. Whether the thief is Jewish or not is inconsequential because a non-Jew is not allowed to steal even from another non-Jew, and this is one of the Sheva mitzvot bnei Noach, the Noach laws. The prohibition to buy stolen goods applies even if the owner was me'ayish, despaired of retrieving the stolen item, because the issue of aiding a transgressor is still relevant. Some poskim try to justify buying stolen goods, claiming that the issue of buying the goods applies only if the thief stole in order to profit from the theft. And if this particular buyer won't purchase the merchandise, he'll stop stealing. If the thief is certain to find a buyer and he's not afraid of getting caught, it is prohibited to buy the stolen goods only if the thief is Jewish, because we're required to prevent a Jew from wrongdoing. This leniency certainly applies if the non-Jewish thief will easily find a different buyer.
Right, so they're arguing there may be a leniency, which is not that if it's for the non-Jewish thief, you're not going to impact his thieving ways at all. You're not the agent of causing him to sin because he's going to be doing this regularly. Okay, all right, go on.
Up to this point, we've discussed cases in which the merchandise was certainly stolen, where the price is so low that it seems obvious that the item is stolen. One is not allowed to buy it. For the same reason, Chazal prohibited buying wool or milk from a shepherd, because the animals he is caring for are not his, and it is most likely that he stole those products. The only way it is permissible to buy from a shepherd is if the owner gives him express permission to sell the items. Some poskim rule that if some of the merchandise the thief is selling is generally his, for example, if the shepherd has some animals of his own, one is allowed to buy from him under the assumption that the items he is buying belong to the shepherd. But a poskim rule more stringently, allowing a person to buy from a thief only if it is certain that in this specific circumstance, some of his merchandise belongs to him. If the thief altered the stolen item in a way that he acquired it through that change, kinyan of shinui ma'aseh, some post-game rule that it is permissible to buy that item from him. We are not concerned that this will cause the thief to continue stealing, because if he can sell the stolen items only after working hard to make significant changes, it is not worthwhile for him to risk stealing. Other post-game rule have, however, that even in such cases, if it is clearly stolen, one may not buy it because that enables the transgression. They therefore permit buying it only if it is uncertain that it was stolen.
Okay, so basically, the halakha, with some variations, basically agrees with Scott. Very simply, if you know it's stolen, whether the thief is Jewish or not Jewish, you cannot buy it because you're literally enabling him to be a thief. And you're creating a market for thievery, and it's breaking down the society. Two, if you have reason, if you're very suspicious, the price is so low that I think you still can't do it. Then Allah gets into something. If you can clearly indicate that you have a reasonable to assume that he's this person's a general seller of these items, then you can, you know, you have a reason. Again, but it's not, it's not really not, halakha is not really so different from what Scott said. You got to use your intuition about what is really the common practice. So if you go into a reputable, you know, service station that's been there for years, and it sounds like, look, I have a good deal, I got it, whatever. You can say it's refurbished. You have no reason to assume that he's a thief, and that's that. So this happens all the time. The being offered stolen goods all the time used to be very common in subways, not so much anymore. Now it's moved to online. Things are super duper cheap on Craigslist, whatever. You cannot do it because you are enabling them to do an avera of stealing, and B, you're causing a whole market, a secondary market of, and it's breaking down the society. It's not a chiddush, but you know, not everybody, people will feel like, well, I'm not doing the technical crime. You know, it's already stolen. I didn't steal it, and like the argument, the owner already gave up hope. I didn't do it. So that's the deal. All right, I got to go teach downstairs. I got to go. Guys, have a great night. Next Wednesday is our last class, and we're going to talk about our dinner. I have to talk about, we'll figure out what the plan is. People see who, I want to find out who many people can make it. That I can't do a dinner. I could do a class by Zoom, but I can't do a dinner by Zoom because that would mean you'd actually be in person to eat food. The 12th. All right, guys. Gotta go.
Bye, let's hope.
We'll talk about it. We'll find where we're going. Okay, bye.